everybody, welcome to a brand new SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. It is only 6 days late, which I apologise to some of you who have been forced to do things such as have more sex with your spouse, or listen to Vince Russo, or all of awful things.
Did anyone actually have to do that? Because that's... Now I feel bad.
Ben Povey said that he listened to Vince Russo's podcast because there was none of us. Ben, there
that's
are
a poor
so
life
many.
Choice. Do you know how many other podcasts there are?
Well, clearly he doesn't. He needs to be shown some more podcasts.
We need to instruct Ben on the ways of the world here, Kenny.
I mean,
I feel like we have failed as podcasters and role models for the future generation. What am I even saying?
I don't know what you're talking about. Just go with it. And what we did, you know, what we've, I mean, since the last time we podcast, the UK is in a state of disarray. We don't have a majority government. Theresa May's plan backfired. Jeremy Corbyn lost, but he's going around like he's won. Oh, there's so much going on over here. But Jim Cornette has once again threatened to murder Vince Russo.
So, isn't that like a daily occurrence, though?
Well, apparently, the way this has all gone down is Russo has challenged Jim Cornette to a debate.
Oh, boy.
And Jim Cornette's 10-minute response. If you've not seen this, like, there's a YouTube channel called Jim Cornette Talking Sense. And it's approved by Jim Cornette, so, you know, go to that.
I'm so out of the wrestling loop right now. I've been in Metropolis all weekend and have no idea what's going on. So all this is probably news to me.
And then Cornette basically had a 10-minute response. And he's made a challenge to Vince Russo. Which is, he doesn't want to debate him because he hates him worse than any human on the planet. He genuinely wishes death upon Vince Russo. So he has no need to debate him or no desire to debate him. He said, but what he will do... Because Vince Russo started saying things like, you know, Jim Cornette doesn't have the balls to say things to my face and all that sort of stuff. So what Jim Cornette has proposed is Vince Russo sends him a time and a place and a location. Jim Cornette will be there and he will bring $5,000. There are three rules. No cops, no knives, no guns. And if Vince Russo can get the $5,000, he can leave with it. Sounds like a deal to me.
Right?
Like, at the worst, there is the funny visual of Jim Cornette having $5,000 stolen from by Vince Russo. And at best, Vince Russo doesn't podcast anymore. So, you know.
I mean, I don't really see a losing scenario here.
But then Vince Russo responded to this by doing an apology. We're halfway through the apology, but this is... gloriously apt. He swerves his own apology.
Oh my gosh.
And calls Jim Cornette a mark who fell off a scaffolding. Bear in mind, this is the man who booked himself as the WCW champion.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Oh, he's such a fucking turd. Anyway.
I don't even know how to process all that. Like, I mean, and the thing is, it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all. I think, like, yeah, no, my nothing, life where I just ignore Vince Russo is so much happier.
But nothing you've heard there has made you go, really?
Oh, no, not at all. I'm just laughing at the situation going, oh, yeah, of course. Of course this would happen.
So yeah, we've been really busy. Saundra was away at Metropolis, which is the Superman convention.
The Superman celebration.
Superman celebration. A celebration, yes, of all things Superman. For me, before we asked on how that was, big RIP to Adam West, the original Batman.
Superman was wearing a black armband this weekend. Like the big giant Superman statue that's in the middle of the city. They put a black armband on him. It was really sweet. Like, some of my friends that I know from Metropolis knew Adam West, and so it was kind of rough for them. But, yeah, I mean, Adam West is my favorite Batman, always will be my favorite Batman. He was absolutely mental.
And also, he was on The Big Bang Theory, and my favorite thing is I've argued for years that Michael Keaton is a better Batman than Christian Bale, and Adam West agrees. So I feel vindicated. Vindicated. That is the correct choice. I love the fact that he places Val Kilmer at the same level as Christian Bale, which is not
right.
Anyway,
I mean, I don't agree with that assessment, but
Val Kilmer was fine. Like, he was okay.
He was okay. I haven't actually seen that movie, so I can't really comment like with any. I don't know. Having seen it, I've only seen clips of that movie. But
how was the Superman celebration? Any anecdotes? Did you throw Jerry Lawler a wee pump?
No, Jerry Lawler was actually not there. So, tear for that. Not actually. I was
singular
not crying about
tear.
That at all.
Singular tear.
Yeah, singular tear.
Was he off at some fucking fag convention instead?
Yeah, right? Right? And for anyone who thinks that Kenny was just super inappropriate, no, those were Jerry Lawler's words. If you don't listen to the Retro Raw Rundown and you only listen to the SmackDown summary, we are referencing the time that Jerry Lawler called Goldust a flaming fag in a promo very recently. I was raging. It was not okay. But no, Jerry Lawler was not there. I guess he did not get invited back this year. So I, you know, did not get the chance to see Mr. Lawler, although we did go to the wrestling shows that they have there every year, and they're always held, they're free, and they're held outside in like one of the alleys, like just kind of in the main town of the celebration. And they're always just such a shit show, right? Like, they auction off these mystery boxes. So it's just these priority mailboxes, like full of free cast off, mostly TNA merch. And like dollar store action figures and stuff like that. So, my friend Ray actually couldn't help himself and was just so intrigued by the mystery boxes that he bought one for $10. So now I am the proud owner of an AJ Styles TNA Impact t-shirt because it was a size small and I was the only one small enough for the size small t-shirt. So I have that. And the design on it is so bad that I couldn't figure out whose it was. Like, on the back it says Impact, and if you kind of squint and tilt your head, you can see that it says sort of an AJ on the front, but it's all blobby. I should post a picture of this thing.
100%.
You could barely tell. But, like, also, he gave me a Randy Orton button, so boo Randy Orton, right? Which I thought was funny. I don't even think he knows how much I hate Randy Orton. But our favorite thing about these wrestling shows that are just, like, ridiculous. So there, we were all chatting because the entrances take forever because the guys have to get dressed in a building that's like down the street. So then they start the entrance music and it's like a good minute before the guy actually appears in the arena. And so Mr. Sandra and like a couple of our pals, we were all talking. We're like, what if somebody just dressed up as a wrestler? I mean, people are in costume around town all the time, right? Like, what if someone just dressed as a wrestler and got in the ring? Like, would they notice? And then this guy comes, we see this like kind of old black gentleman who has his eyebrows painted white and his beard painted white, and he's dressed in like slacks and suspenders and like a vest or a waistcoat. And we're like, what is this guy doing? Oh, is he? And you could see underneath he had like a blue, almost spandex, like long sleeve shirt underneath this Uncle Remus getup kind of. And we were like, wait, is he actually the wrestler? And we saw he had like worker shoes on. We're like, he's actually the wrestler. And then they announce his name, and his name is Super Brown. Like, I kid you not, this like black gentleman is going by Super Brown. He became our favorite wrestler of the weekend. He at one point, and he was wrestling the Joker, by the way, who was also just dressed in like slacks and a cutoff t-shirt, so it was like casual Friday wrestling or something. And I mean, the match was absolute shite. And at one point, Super Brown goes under the ring, strips off his like old black man clothes, and is wearing, I can't even really describe it. It has like the Superman shield, but it says SB, and then he has these suspenders, and then it also says SB like really near his crotch, and it's all really baggy and unfortunate looking. And you don't know if he's like just this sad man or like what's going on, but he became our hero of the weekend. Super Brown did.
Can I ask you a very quick question?
Yeah.
I'm about to use a word that is not my word. I want to just preface this. Mm-hmm. What do you think is more politically incorrect if they were standing beside each other? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Super Brown or Negataker?
Oh, boy. Probably Negataker would be more politically incorrect. Well, I mean, the twist was that he was called Super Brown, not Super Black.
That's true, that's true. The problem with Negataker was the lack of subtlety.
Right.
And what he was, And then, but I mean, to be fair, Nigger Taker did have a show stopped because of how offensive his name was.
Right, which, I mean, it's pretty offensive.
Super Brown did not.
Super Brown did not. Super Brown, you know...
Did he win?
I think he won with a roll. Now I can't even remember if Super Brown won that match. I think he did, but then the Joker ended up getting his belt, whipping Super Brown with the belt, and then choking him with the belt, and I felt very uncomfortable about the whole situation.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you had fun.
I did. I did. like, I mean, these wrestling shows are just always... It's one of those things where, like, I've gone to some independent shows. I've gone to, obviously, like, WWE shows or whatever. But when you just go to a random wrestling show in a back alley, you just never know what's going to happen.
There's a message for all of us to take home. I do want to... couple of things. Thank you to everybody who came to the Chris Jericho shows in Ireland. I was amazed at how many people knew Inside the Ropes. Thank you to Bethany and Victoria, who came to the Belfast show all the way from England and Wales and wore their Inside the Ropes t-shirts. I very much appreciate you. Thank you to Dean and, oh God, I'm going to pronounce... I also spoke to a young 16-year-old boy who I'm sure his name was spelled O-I-S-I-N. And I can't remember how you pronounce it. I feel really bad. First of all, if that's not his name, I feel even worse. But secondly, I actually Googled how to pronounce it, but that was like a day ago because I thought we were recording it yesterday. And now I've forgotten. So, Oisin? That's not how you say it. Hang on. How do you pronounce?
Goodness. I have no idea, so I'm
Google
not
it while we're on air.
Great radio.
Oisin. Oisin.
Oh, okay.
I think that's his name. But yeah, so Andrew Bartley, all these people came up and said hi. I appreciate it very much. And if you're in the UK, don't worry. Early 2018, we are bringing Chris Jericho back. And we're going to hit London, Manchester and Glasgow. For anyone who complains about why we picked those three cities, please look at a map. And look at... We try to go to as far spread out places as we can so everyone should be able to get to a show, you know... tops 3 hours away from where they live. That is the reason why we go to those cities. Yeah, it was really good shows, really good fun. And then we went to Download, and we'll have interviews coming up in the next couple of days with NXT champion Bobby Roode, WWE UK champion Pete Dunne, and Aleister Black, who might be the coolest guy I've ever met in my life. But when we were leaving Download, Sandra, so
yes.
I went camping this weekend. Or it was supposed to be called glamping. So it's like glamorous camping.
Oh my gosh, you were going glamping.
Jink, I'm going to... Right, have you met me?
No, when you... I have met you. And when you said camping, I actually got a look on my face like, Kenny, camping? This could be amazing to document. But then you said glamping, and I went, oh, right, of course.
Do you really think I'm going to fucking even attempt to build a tent?
No.
No, not at all.
There is a 0% chance that you would attempt to build a tent.
Someone who's listening to this set this up, so I'm not going to say their name, that, you know, also set up the backlash thing. So, you know, thank you to that person for setting me up with a loft, it was called, where it had like a wooden elevation and then there was a, you know, beds inside it. And it was like it was really cool, really nice. But the problem was, wherever you went, here's my pet peeve, right? My pet peeve in life, I hate seeing shit. Like, human shit. I hate it with a passion. It makes me want to be sick. I just don't like it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my rule, as an IBS sufferer, is whenever I go for a shit anywhere, I treat it like a crime scene. You should never know I was there.
No, clean your shit up.
Right? So we went to these, like, VIP toilets, which were in our section. VIP, there was fucking shit smeared up the fucking pan everyone you went into. And they're so claustrophobic, like, it was horrible. So anyway, I held in a shit for 2 days, right, and I finally found these toilets which were nice enough, and I had to go in after a guy, and then, you know, you sit down, the seat's still warm, and ugh. So I finally, and you know, all is good. We see Fozzy, we see Aerosmith, we see Sum 41, we watched like 3 NXT shows. There was like a killer main event on the last night, an eight-man tag team match with the Authors of Pain, Pete Dunne and Bobby Roode against Aleister Black, Mark Andrews, Roderick Strong and Drew McIntyre.
Ooh, that sounds great.
Like, it was fantastic. There was loads of good wrestling and Billy Kay and Peyton Royce. and there was lots going on.
Aww.
I decided for the first time in my life to have a space cake. And it kicked in.
How did that go, Kenny?
It kicked in while I was at NXT, and I was like, how long has this match been going? And they were like, 4 minutes. It feels like 5 hours. And then I had like a backstory in my head for Asuka, because I was watching Asuka come down, and I was like, she's just got this, you know, she's just got this hot thing about her, right? Like, she just looks like she could kill you in the bedroom. And like, I started making up a backstory for Asuka in my head, because I was like, there's no way that a guy has his way with Asuka. She has her way with anybody that she wants to. So then I came up with this backstory of like, maybe Asuka's a lesbian. And then I imagined that if she was, her, like, her girlfriend would be like a high power attorney in New York or something. And I just had this whole, so this was me in this space cake, just, you know, not able to think. And the other person that had also taken a space cake, we kept just thinking that we were worse than the other. And we were both getting more paranoid. So I ended up having to go back to my tent because it was too much. I couldn't handle it. And so anyway, so it comes time to leave download. And I was going to get an Uber and they were, oh no, you can get the taxi over here to East Midlands Airport, which is like, if an airport developed syphilis and
nice.
Then had been bombed and was still standing. That's
so it's not in a good way then.
No. There was a W.H. Smith that literally had like 2 bottles of Fanta. 2!
And that was it? No, like, was there anything else in the store?
Like, 1 Pepsi Max, 2 Fanta. It was like, you can't have any more than 3 of 1 bottle in this fridge. And you know, the fridge is like, it's fucking room temperature, just a light on. It's not a fridge. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so it was so bad that I ended up like paying money to get an earlier flight home. Because I was like, I can't stay in this airport for 7 hours. I can't do it.
This is why Kenny and camping made me laugh, ladies and gentlemen.
So we're about to leave, and my 3G could not work at all the whole weekend, so I couldn't do any of the podcasts. And so we go to the taxi rank, and the drive from download to East Midlands Airport is about 10 minutes. And the guy was like, that's going to be £25. And I was like, okay, sure, no worries. You know, it's fine. And we're in the taxi. And he's put bin bags all over the chairs and the seats and the floor.
Oh, no.
Because he was like, oh, last year it was so muddy. And I'm like, but mate, you could tell he got like Asda Smart Price bin bags. So anyway, we're in the taxi. And we've not left yet. And he says, oh, it'll be £25. I was like, okay, cool. And he said, so if you just give me the money now, that'll be fine. I was like, whoa, why am I giving you the money now? And he said, oh, that's just the way we do it here. And I was like, no, it's not. That's not how you do taxis.
No.
You don't get in a taxi and give money until you get to your destination. So he was like, oh, it's just, why would you not just give me the money? And I was like, why would you ask for the money? So we're at this standstill, and we're going back and forth, and I'm ready to go.
I mean, I might have been ready to get another taxi when I saw the bin bags, but...
So then...
I don't know what kind of crime scene's gone on in the back of his car.
So I eventually kind of, I said, I'm not going to give you this £25 now, and then you can just drop us half a mile from the airport if you want. He was like, no. He was like, I'm so offended. How could you think that I would drop you half a mile from the airport? I was like, because you're asking for the money up front.
That's not how taxis work.
This is not how, why am I telling you how your business works? So I'm just getting
riled. Do you think
up.
You'd never taken a taxi before? I mean, seriously.
I think I was like in some sort of like Stockholm Syndrome basement and I'd just gotten out. Like, what's going on?
So, you're not Kimmy Schmidt over here. Like, you know how the world works. It's okay.
And I thought, do you know what? I'm just... And I thought of you, actually. You cunt.
Oh, great.
Oh, maybe Sandra will think I'm being too aggressive to this taxi driver for what he's doing. So I thought, do you know what? I'll just give him the money. And it can be on Sandra's head if he's an arsehole.
I love that this is being blamed on me.
Notice no denial. So, we get in the taxi, and we go and we drive, and then he takes, like, the wrong way at one point. Of course he does. And then I want you to imagine that there's a street. And look ahead of you right now if you're listening to this. There's a street ahead of you that's, like, a mile long. And half a mile up on your right, there is a... No, so I'd say that the street's about half a mile long. And about a quarter of the mile up, there is a petrol station on the right. And then when you get up to the full half mile, you turn left and go about another half mile and you can see the terminal. That's where you get dropped off. And he's driving up this street and he pulls in to the petrol station. And I said, excuse me, why are you parking here? He was like, oh, I can't get into the airport, so I'm just going to drop you here. I was like, so you're going to do the exact thing that I told you that I was not going to accept. And I was like, you're going to drop us at this airport right now. And he was like, there's nowhere for me to go. I was like, see the bit that says drop off?
That is where you go, sir.
That is where you drop us off. And I think he knew that I was about to blow a gasket.
Mm-hmm.
And then he drove in, and then I realized as he drove in what the problem was. For the drop-off, there's a little sign that says £2 for up to 10 minutes. So you didn't want to pay £2, motherfucker. So you're gonna drop me off at the fucking BP? and I had my little suitcase that's on its last legs, literally, because one leg fell off and it doesn't go right. It's now dead, and I was gonna have to wheel that across a fucking bypass to get to a terminal? Fuck you! And your fucking download taxi, pish. So that happened.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Like, so they make you pay £2. Like, he'd already had your money. It's not like he didn't have the £2 to pay.
Exactly.
Or couldn't he have just charged you 27 and then said, it's $27?
That's what my mom
said. And then he can drop you off at the place?
My mom said, she was like, he should have charged 27. But, like, it was the fact that, like, I had thrown up such a sort of defense wall about, like, why am I paying you up front and da-da-da-da.
And then he proved you right.
And then I was like, you're just going to drop us off, like, far away. And he was like, no, I won't. And then he did. And I was like, do you think I got amnesia in the 20 minutes that it took you to do the wrong turn at Donington to get to this fucking airport? Oh, my God. Incompetent cunt that he was. Now, I don't know. Now, listen. If anybody's listening to this who has driven a taxi at download, I am not saying this is you. Just before I get any emails or any texts.
But if this story does sound very familiar, maybe check yourself. Maybe just have a think
yeah.
about how you run your operation.
So with that being said, this is the SmackDown Summary episode number 46. It is 6 days late, but Sandra, I feel like it's time for us to get into talking about SmackDown from Rochester, New York. It is 2 weeks until the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Are you ready?
Well, I think we should get into talking about SmackDown, but I mean, just I'm not gonna give it all away here. But I don't know if you remember Kenny, but who's the WWE champion currently?
Jinder Mahal, unfortunately.
Okay, okay.
Right.
And what did you say that you would do if Jinder fucking Mahal won the WWE Championship? I believe, that it's the month of the Maharaja. Right?
Well, technically, the month of Maharaja runs out on Sunday.
Well, but I mean, I never got a chance to implement any sort of punishment for the month of Maharaja. I mean, I've barely spoken to you this past week, you know, with all of your adventures with taxis and shitty toilets and all of this stuff. I mean, we really haven't had a chance to talk, but I thought that I would let you know here.
All right, okay. What is it? What are you going to make me do? What do I need
to do? Well, I'm not going to tell you now. I'm just going to tell you that I might have come up with something. Remind you that that's out there.
Right. Well, as long as you know, you got till Sunday.
Okay.
Because once Sunday's come, it's like, this is your money in the bank, bitch. This is your money in the bank. If you don't cash it, which, by the way, they should totally do, somebody who, like, forgets to cash in and gets taken off them.
No, I want that. Weren't we? I forget who I was talking to about that. I don't remember if it was you or not, but like, I actually want someone to hold on to the Money in the Bank contract for the year and then have that be like, okay, they only have a week to cash in. Like, oh, they only have 5 days to cash in, whatever. I think that would be a compelling story.
Yeah, I mean, they could totally, like, if somebody won, I don't know how difficult this would be, but if you could have somebody win, like, a Money in the Bank at like 10:47 p.m.,
yeah,
on like June the 11th, and then like figure out a way that on June the 11th the next year there would be a TV show or a pay-per-view or something that you could do. Mm-hmm. That'd be great.
And then like they would have to try and cash in before that, but like the champion's scheduled to be in the main event, so they'd have to figure something out. Like, I don't know, I think that would be really fun actually.
Yeah, hopefully hopefully you can kick that off by forgetting it. So you're not going to tell me what it is right now?
I'm not going to tell you what it is right now, but
is
I'm just saying that
David's?
I might have something selected It might be worse than David's. I'm not sure how you'll feel about. Well, I know how you'll feel about it, but.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, do you know what? I'm a man of my word. I'm a man of my word. Bring it on. Bring it on. Anyway. So it's. Now I'm gonna be thinking about it.
That's why I wanted to tell you now. so that it's on your mind.
I this is not a bit. Like, I genuinely don't know what she's thinking, which terrifies me. Because usually she doesn't want to get involved in this kind of stuff.
No, I don't, which usually just makes this even more exciting. Usually I'm like, Kenny, I don't care.
Oh, God. Okay. If MD can think about what it is, tweet me. Let me know. Okay, so we open the show with Shane McMahon coming down. He's got he introduces the female competitors for the Money in the Bank match on Sunday. Tamina, Natalia, Carmella, Becky Lynch, and Charlotte. And he introduces the new white briefcase for Money in the Bank. We get the Money in the Bank theme song.
It's now, gorgeous, by the way, the briefcase. I think it's so pretty. I think it's way prettier than the men's one. And also, it's not pink and sparkly.
It's nice. I like it now. I also watched SmackDown when I was high. So I don't know if there's bits I've made up. We'll see. Now, did I?
I don't have notes in front of me. I watched it a week ago, so I don't remember. Should I be like getting up notes just to make sure that you're not adding segments or something?
It's not that bad. It's not that. Well, basically, like my big thing was that Shane McMahon stumbled a fair few times in this episode. I think because did he not refer to Tamina as a two-time superstar?
I think he did, actually.
What does that mean?
And then he was like, I don't know. I totally superstar. Would have forgotten it, but yeah. Yeah, I remember being like, what?
You're like, we don't need two of Tamina. One's enough.
Well, and she's not even like, she's never been Divas Champion. So it's not that. It's not like he meant to say she was a two-time Divas Champion or Women's Champion or anything like that. Just a two-time superstar. I'm fairly sure that happened.
Yeah, if you remember it, it must have happened. So
that rings a bell.
We get James Ellsworth talking about how, you know, he talking about the Money in the Bank and how Carmella's going to win it. She talks about how she'd be the last one up the ladder. And then I quite liked when Charlotte said, pipe down, princess, the queen has something to say.
That was pretty good, actually.
What I like about Charlotte is that... whether she's playing this face or heel role or tweener or whatever she is, she kind of reminds me a little bit. I don't know if you get this, but like, even kind of like when we're watching Retro Raw, there's some people who aren't fully defined as a babyface or heel. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of on that level, and I like that. Like, you know, like this is a bit where she thanks Shane for giving the other women a chance to brush up against greatness.
Right.
Like, I like the idea that, like, it's not just a...
This doesn't feel like a babyface turn in a traditional sense to me. It feels like they're putting Charlotte on another level. Like when we watch Retro Raw, and I've been talking about, you know, Steve Austin is not a babyface on Retro Raw. Steve Austin is Steve Austin. And I feel like Charlotte is Charlotte. And I feel like she's just on a different level.
And I think this is maybe the first time that they've actually had a female be able to have those kind of nuances. Because a lot of times they make sure that it's a heel and face. And mm-hmm. I like that we're starting to
get
more.
I think with AJ they did it some.
Yes. I think part of that was bad booking. But yes.
Accurate. They did some.
I feel bad for AJ. AJ could have done quite well in this kind of era.
I think she would have been great.
So Natalia then talks about, you know, it's always... been her because she's the best there is, and then Becky Lynch says she just rips off her Uncle Brett.
Well, didn't Natalia say to Charlotte, like, stop stealing your father's catchphrases?
Yeah.
Right then, before she said, I am the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. Like, that's so intentional and also so Natalia.
Yeah, and then Becky Lynch says, you know, why don't you do what you do best, and that's ripping off your Uncle Brett, the only thing I rip off is arms, which is another good line. And then Naomi comes out and she's like, you know, she wished she could have been in the match because it was going to be lit, which is funny because, like, when someone who's cool says the word lit, it works. I can't say lit.
No, like, nor can I.
Like, I couldn't be like,
I'm definitely
Sondra,
not that cool.
Sondra, that party was lit. Like, I can't do
it. And I'd be like, shut the fuck up, Kenny.
I can't do it. Then we get the debut of Lana making a surprise appearance. The fans go fucking apeshit for Lana. They're loving a bit of Lana. she comes out in this blue dress, and she gets in the ring, and she's kind of like, you know, flirting with Shane a little bit, and then he's like, yeah, this isn't really working for me right now.
He's like, why are you here? No, you don't get to do this.
And then she's like, you know, whatever works for me, you know, I could make it work for you. She wants in the Money in the Bank ladder match, which...
I didn't really understand the weird tension that she was trying to...
I think what she was trying to say, Sandra, is I will have sex with you to get into the match.
Right. It didn't seem like Lana at all. Like,
you mean because she wasn't throwing strops and going in huffs with people?
Well, I mean, there's that. But Lana in character, right? Like, okay. Lana, who's married to Alexander Rusev. Lana, who is, like, the strong, you know, like, Lana crush. Lana is, you know, the strong woman behind Rusev. Lana, who was his business manager and his, you know, ambassador or whatever. She doesn't seem like someone who'd be all like, I'm going to flirt with the, you know, guy in charge of the show. It just seems really... like a major departure, and Lana's not a completely new person because she kept the accent. So we are still supposed to believe that she's this Russian, you know, bombshell or whatever. I don't know. It felt very strange to me.
It was odd. But when she asks to be in the Money in the Bank match, all the other women just kind of laugh at her, which I thought was like quite interesting because that is kind of what they should be doing, because she's never we've seen her have one match,
yeah,
at WrestleMania,
and she was barely in that match.
Yeah, I think she did one good kick. That was it. And Naomi said, you know, you don't belong in the match. Who have you beaten? And then Lana says, I could beat you. And then Shane kind of stops it and he's like, you know, Lana, you need to earn your opportunities. And she just kind of walks off. And that's going to lead us into a six women tag. I thought the opening segment was really good, and I thought everybody played their part really well, and I thought it was a good debut for Lana compared to what I thought it could have been.
Yeah, I was intrigued to see Lana, and I'm glad that we're seeing Lana. I guess, like, my feelings on the whole Lana situation are kind of complex, and we'll get into it more later when we, you know, find out the continuation of the story, but I know a lot of people weren't happy to see Lana debut here. I am actually... I don't know if it's popular or not. I'm glad that she's debuting. I wanted her to actually come around. Like, do I think her matches are going to be amazing? I have my doubts about that. But I think that the women's division needs more women in it to tell stories, because we've been stuck in this six-person rut, right? Where we just keep getting six-woman tags and we get another one later on in the show, right? Like, they just keep putting the whole division against each other and it feels like it's not really going anywhere, and it needed an injection of something to shake it up and add new feuds and add, you know, kind of a new dynamic. Plus, Lana's a very different character to the rest of the women. She does focus a lot on her looks. She wears the long, sparkly ball gown. She's the dancer. She's not a type of woman that we have in the division right now, and it seems like she could kind of step into that Eva Marie-type role. Like, I mean, she's not going to be the same character as Eva Marie, but I think... her story could be really interesting. It could fall flat on its face if she ends up just sucking and being terrible. I think, like, I really wish that, and I hope that she's going to prove to us that she's better than we think she is and that she really steps up here, because I know a lot of people have their doubts. I have my doubts, but I'm glad to see some new life injected into the women's division again, because I think that is sorely needed.
Yeah, I feel like she's going to be an amalgamation of the Eva Marie Emelina stuff.
Yeah.
Which is good. Like, the thing is, Lana's not a great wrestler. She's just started out, so it makes sense to give her a kind of a gimmick where she can work that to advantage and all that sort of stuff. And
I don't have a problem with having that type of character on the show. If that's the only type of character that's on the show, like, you know, the 2000, I don't know, what, like 9, 10, 11 Divas era where everyone was just pretty and... like, I mean, I didn't watch, so I could be getting the years wrong, but where they were just hiring models, the wrestling didn't matter. The women who could actually wrestle were just kind of like shoved to the side, because it's like, no, we need to look at all of these skinny women. I have a problem if that's the only type of character, but we don't have one of those right now. Everyone else in there, I mean, Carmella's not a great wrestler, but she has a very different character and she's very opportunistic, right? Like, I like the diversity in characters, and I like that Lana is different and stands out.
Plus, she's hot.
Accurate.
So it means that, like, that's what I mean by that is that, like, it's okay to have one of those characters. Like,
yeah.
It's okay to have, like, a Sable or a Sunny. You know, you need to have loads of other characters because the wrestling element's gone up so much. But, yeah, I like it. I think it's good. We had the six women tag, which was fine. You know, it was again, the kind of standard fare of these six women tags. And in the end, Lana walked out and pulled Naomi's leg out from under her apron. Tamina,
I mean, I was a little annoyed with Naomi for just getting distracted by Lana's presence because I was like, you know you're going to lose this match now, right? Like, you know that you're just getting distracted, so you're going to lose. And then she loses to Tamina, of all people.
Yeah, I forgot Tamina. I forgot what Tamina's theme song sounded like.
Oh, did you? All the drums?
Just drums and jungle.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Brendan Fraser was going to come out in fucking California Man or something.
Encino Man.
Yeah, so the match was fine. I don't really have much to say about it. You know, they did something with Naomi and Lana to further the thing. So,
like, as a match, it was basically there to exist and then have the Naomi-Lana spot so that they could have an interaction and Lana could, you know, try and goad Naomi. I like that Lana, as a character right now, is very calculated. And I'm trying to distance my feelings of Total Divas Lana from,
do you know what fucks me
SmackDown
up even
Lana?
More? Fucking Renee Young's not going to be on Total Divas anymore. You heard this?
Yes. Oh, I did hear this.
But Lana's still going to be on it.
The worst decision.
But have you heard who's coming on it?
Alexa and Nia?
Yes! Oh, so
which
good.
Means, you know what that means? Buddy Murphy on Total Divas. Ah, I'm so excited.
Oh, God, Sandra.
At least he'll be on TV.
Yeah, you get to see... Yeah, you get to see him. And then maybe
Michael Ferrer and I are probably the only two people who are excited about this, but...
Yes, I would concur. Shane McMahon's backstage, and he walks up to the Andre the Giant trophy, because, you know, Mojo Rawley has shipped it to the arena again.
Of course.
He talks about, you know, he thought...
I mean, that's just a large thing to, like, be carrying around all the time.
It is. It's too big. It's too... I wouldn't want a trophy that big.
It's unwieldy.
He talks about how he thought winning the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal would jumpstart his career, but he's not done it for 2 months. He wants an opportunity. He reminded Shane that he's the only person to defeat Jinder Mahal since he came to SmackDown. Jinder fucking Mahal. This is we're currently watching a man with the Andre the Giant trophy, who's a Hmong, talk about he's the only guy that's ever defeated the WWE champion who was a jobber 6 weeks ago. Just keeping you up to speed, folks.
That's where we are, but he didn't have the Singh brothers when he faced Mojo Rawley 2 months ago.
But at the same time, this is the month of Maharaja, and I can't say anything bad. So the positive of that is it's the land of opportunity, and everyone's getting an opportunity of all skill levels, which is great. That's what I like.
So, see, I kind of, it feels like anything could happen. Also...
No! This theory needs to be debunked somewhere. Anything can happen. You can be shot in the leg. Doesn't mean you're going to like it.
No. It's not like anything's going to be, but it feels exciting, right? Like, I like the dynamic
of
giving people a chance.
It feels exciting if the results can be good, which I'm sure they could be.
Which they absolutely could be.
Stop making me go into places where I have to say bad things. I'm trying to be nice. I've only got one more of these to do. And then I can go back to my old ways.
But I think, like, I hate myself for this.
No, you don't.
I kind of found Mojo Rawley likable here.
I mean, he was fine. He was fine.
Like, he's getting so much more likable when he's dropping the, like, dude bro, every drunk guy who's tried to grab me at a bar thing.
He made a good point here about, you know, he'd beaten Jinder Mahal. And then Shane said, you've got an opportunity. You can get in the Money in the Bank match if you can defeat Jinder tonight. So I thought that made sense. And it was a good way to, if you're going to do the match, it's cool.
And that's the thing I like about the whole land of opportunity thing on SmackDown is that Shane is still making people earn their opportunities. And the way he makes them earn them doesn't always make loads of sense, but you know, you kind of go with it. Right. And it seems like there is some sort of logical progression. And this match had stakes because, and also like, not that much drama because I didn't really think that Mojo Rawley was going to beat Jinder Mahal here, because they're really trying to, you know, make Jinder Mahal the champion and be credible and that kind of thing. And that's going to take all the work they can put into it. But I think it could start an interesting story for Mojo Rawley, because losing the match, not being in Money in the Bank. And I think he was on Talking Smack after SmackDown, right?
I've not watched Talking Smack, but you could okay. be correct.
I think he was on Talking Smack as well, and actually was super likable and super relatable, and saying about how he failed and how he really has to examine himself. And he's like, I'm not going to make any excuses. Like, I failed. I really need to look at this. And I don't remember all what he said, because I watched it a week ago, but he was actually very personable and very likable. And I sort of hated myself for that, because I was like, I am not.
Do you want me to bring you back down to earth?
Yes, please.
Good. Okay. Here's an interaction Mojo Rawley had with Zack Ryder on Twitter. Zack Ryder is a big fan of wrestling figures, or figures, yes. just in general. He collects Ghostbusters figures. Anyway, WWE tweet out, everyone has to wait until Comic-Con to get their hands on the highly anticipated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle action figures. Well, everyone except Zack Ryder. Mojo Rawley retweets, you're a grown man, Peter Pan. Can't believe we used to tag Zack Ryder.
Fuck Mojo Rawley.
And then Zack Ryder came back with, I know. It's unfortunate that I'll have to display a Mojo figure in my home when the Hype Bros Battle Pack comes out. And then Mojo Rawley replied, and I need to find this one because it's just so good. And this is, you're going to hate him for this so much.
Oh, thank you, because I was starting to like him and I didn't know how to feel about it.
So Zack Ryder says, I know, it's unfortunate that I'll have to display a Mojo figure in my home when the Hype Bros Battle Pack comes out. Mojo's response, make sure you put me in a good spot, right between the Barbie dolls, I mean adult collectibles, hashtag chicks.
Fuck Mojo Rawley. Okay, thank you. I needed that.
That's what we're here for in the SmackDown Summary. When one of us strays into a bad land, we pull them back.
That's what friendship is all about.
That's what friends are for. So up next we have AJ Styles versus Dolph Ziggler. They right the wrong of last week. AJ Styles beats Dolph Ziggler, and I'm sure it's like after this, JBL still talks about how Dolph Ziggler is the favorite.
Does he? I don't remember that, but if he does, I mean, just JBL.
I mean, I like that JBL's at least, you know, trying to make Dolph Ziggler seem. Do you know what I want to see? At Money in the Bank, I want Dolph Ziggler to be about to win and about to grab the briefcase, and then I want that woman that he stood up for a date to run through the crowd and push the
Oh my gosh.
Over. And she'd be like, fucking wrestlers, and then just walk off. And then Dolph Ziggler can go into the first intergender WWE feud. Sounds like China. Where I just want
him
Dolph
against
Ziggler,
that woman.
Him against that woman, but just one super kick to her face so it explodes, and then he pins her.
I think
and
it might, it. Too.
Yeah, that'd be good. I'd be into it. But AJ Styles beats Dolph Ziggler. It's okay, folks. All's okay with the world again. AJ Styles has...
And again, like, the match was fine, but I don't remember it being outstanding.
I tell you what was outstanding. So bear in mind, I have not... At this point, this is like Friday morning... And I haven't watched SmackDown. And I haven't really... Like, I know that Nakamura and Owens had a match, but I didn't really know anything about the segments. So I'm going into this with no expectation or knowing what's going to happen. And up comes the Fashion Files. And I go, okay, great, a Fashion Files. I'm into that. Now, I'm, at this point, just very, very high. And I'm trying to focus on... the Fashion Files. And then Fandango's like, the cologne's cologne. And then Tyler Breeze is like, the cologne's cologne? The cologne cologne? The cologne cologne? The cologne cologne? My head almost exploded.
I bet it did.
I could not.
I mean, that went on for a while. Did you think that your brain just got stuck on repeat?
I had to check the time on the file, because I thought maybe I'd rewound it by mistake and kept watching the same bit, but no, it was just so. But it was funny that was the part that, and it, but the best thing is, so they're going on doing their thing, and there's all these great, like, I can't even remember them now because it was so long ago since I watched it. But the one of the great Easter eggs of watching the Fashion Files is the wall with all the people on it.
Oh, and, yeah,
and it's just a weekly.
Here's
joy.
Looking at you, kid.
Yeah.
That was the best one. Here's with you, kid. Man. Oh, that was incredible. So the New Day are then outside in color. There's no way for me to get around this. Anyway, they are not in the Fashion Files.
They were not in the black and white film noir setting.
Thank you.
It's like the vaudevillains, you know, changed to black and white for their entrance. Yes, they were still black, but they were also in color.
Yes, that's right. They were. Mm-hmm. So they're walking down with the ice cream cart and they go to see the fashion police. And as they walk in, they go into the black and white film noir color as well. And they're like, why are we in black and white? And they want Tyler Breeze and Fandango to take on the case of the Usos, but then they hand the Usos all their files that they have on the Usos. And it's like three boxes, and then they do a skit with the Day One is H t-shirt, and the New Day walk off as the Fashion Police do a version of the New Day Rocks chant, which is, what was it they were saying again?
New Case Rocks, because they have a new case.
This was the funniest one they've done so far for me. I thought they nailed this one.
I wondered if the interaction with the New Day and the Fashion Police would be the best thing, or if it would ruin the Fashion Police, right? Because you never quite know with the New Day if they're just going to overpower a segment or if it's going to go really well. And this went so well. They played off one another so fantastically. And the New Day and the Fashion Police working together actually makes a good deal of sense in a way. Like, they're such bonkers characters. And I'm such a fan of comedy wrestling and comedy in wrestling when it's done well. And I think that New Day can do it well. And I think the Fashion Police we've seen do it very, very well. So those two teams having a dynamic and having kind of a working relationship in the midst of their other feuds, it feels like the tag division actually has some legs to it now, right? Because you have the New Day going after the Usos for the championships, and that's a title story, but you still have the secondary story of who trashed the Fashion Police's office. And I like that there are alliances within the tag division. It'll create some possibilities for some interesting matchups, right? And you know, the Fashion Police are still kind of intertwined with the Uso thing a little bit, because if they're helping the New Day, then, you know, they're still just kind of around on the periphery. So it doesn't mean they're completely separate from them and won't interact ever again. And I mean, I like that there's kind of a secondary tag division story, and I really still really, 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 really want it to be American Alpha who trashed the office and for that to be the feud. Because where are American Alpha? Where are they? I don't understand why they're not around.
I don't get it. I don't understand. They've. Is there anyone who's had a worse run of luck compared to the expectation that people thought of the draft era? I don't know.
Maybe Apollo Crews, but I don't know if the expectations were quite as high for him.
I don't think they were. American Alpha probably is it. We go to Mojo Rawley versus Jinder Mahal it's a non-title match, but obviously if Mojo wins, he gets into Money in the Bank. If he loses, then he does not. The match goes about 5 minutes. And in the end, Mojo gets his eyes raked, well, the referee didn't see, tossed into the corner post, and then Jinder hit the Cobra Clutch Slam to get the win. Any thoughts on the match?
I like the storytelling of this, actually. I mean, the match itself, no, it was nothing. But the story of Mojo Rawley having a victory over Jinder Mahal, needing to get another victory over Jinder Mahal, but he's a new person, right? I think that's something Mojo was saying on Talking Smack, like, Jinder's a new guy now. He's, you know, he's different than he was, and, you know, he's more formidable, blah, blah, blah. But I also like when people are put into these types of matches, because this doesn't happen very often, right? Like, most of the time you get put into a match like this, if you win it, you win your spot, and then they usually win and get into the match. Mm-hmm. I like that there are times that, you know, Shane gives Mojo an opportunity and he doesn't win, because that's another story to tell. And it doesn't feel as formulaic. It feels like, oh, okay, now where is he going to go from here?
Yeah, no, I thought Jinder actually did a pretty decent promo post-match where he talked about, you know, he dismantled Mojo's dreams. He's going to do that to Randy in his hometown of St. Louis. He talked about Randy being sick and the people who support him are the same. And yeah, so you know, he did his kind of usual ending to the promo, but called himself the Maharaja and speaking in Punjabi. But like he did a good job.
Yeah. No, like I actually, and again, like being in that weird mental state where I was like, Mojo Rawley's kind of likable here. What's going on? And then I don't think Jinder Mahal did poorly at all. Like I actually liked this as a moment. It didn't feel like the WWE champion having a match at all.
This match should not have been any longer than it was.
No, not at all. I mean, it's a very throwaway thing, but just as a throwaway thing on a show, I think it accomplished something.
We cut backstage to Randy Orton, who's been interviewed about Jinder, and he talked about having the honor of getting calls from like Ric Flair and Harley Race, and you know, they were all telling him the same thing, that he should let Jinder do all the talking, he should do his talking in the ring, in St. Louis, at Money in the Bank. And what's interesting to me about this is that, you know, Randy Orton, as we've seen before, when he's motivated, he's pretty great. But he's very rarely motivated, which mm-hmm. is the problem. And, you know, you've got Jinder, who is attempting to elevate himself, and then you've got Randy, who is cutting these very pedestrian promos about the match. But I'm not even saying I blame him, because I don't really know what Randy can do. You know, there's not really much of a story with the two guys. But yeah, I'm just kind of, I guess I'm intrigued about how understated and underplayed Randy Orton has been on TV since Backlash.
Well, the story doesn't even... Well, and Randy Orton as champion, the story didn't seem to be Randy Orton mattered at all, right? Like, it felt like going into WrestleMania 30 when Randy was champion. I think people forget that Daniel Bryan won the championship from Randy Orton because he tapped out Batista, right? Like, it felt mm-hmm. like Daniel Bryan and Batista were the story, and Randy Orton was just kind of there and had the belt. And I think that's one of the biggest problems with having Randy Orton as champion, you know, despite him... Or, like, other than just my boot Randy Orton thing. Like, I think he never... feels like he matters all that much. He's just a guy who is a very talented wrestler who they put the belt on, but he seems secondary in his stories a lot of the time, unless he gets to like actually sink his teeth into something, like when he was fighting Christian or whatever, like that,
or when he was a Wyatt
involved in, or when he was a Wyatt, exactly, that seemed to involve him. Now it just seems like he's the guy with the belt, but he could be anybody with the belt and the story would be exactly the same. Like, does Randy Orton really have defining characteristics? Maybe that's part of the problem.
Well, do you know what? I mean, this is a very different example, but when I was at Download at the weekend, System of a Down were playing, and I'd never seen them play live, and I was only very kind of vaguely familiar with some of their stuff, and I thought they were pretty good. Like, I kind of enjoyed watching it, but I'm not the right guy to ask because I'm not a huge follower of theirs. Mm-hmm. And what I noticed the next day was a lot of people at the festival commenting about how bad they thought they were. That, you know, like one of the singers, like, looked like The Undertaker. Like, you know, didn't look
like now?
Yeah, like, didn't look like he cared, had a hat on, you know, dark. Mm. Like, just kind of was there. And, but what was funny to me is that, according to the people who liked System of a Down a lot more and had a lot more comparison to go with, said that they just seemed very disinterested. They didn't really seem... They didn't do anything, you know, that made them look like they really cared. And then fast forward to Aerosmith, who were on Sunday night, who just knocked it out of the park. Like, Steve Tyler, I mean, fuck, he's 69 years old.
I was going to say, is he like... I thought he was like near 70, so...
Yeah, and he was incredible. He was running up and down the ramp. He was playing the piano. He was insane. For 2 hours. And I think that sometimes you get people like Randy Orton / System of a Down who are very talented but can kind of get by on just coasting.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have people like Aerosmith and AJ Styles who could also get by on coasting but very rarely do. They
right.
go out there and they go balls to the wall to make you remember it. And I think that's just, maybe Randy Orton's just one of those performers.
It seems like he is, and I think that's the biggest problem I have with Randy Orton is that he just, when he's not motivated, which is most of the time, it's almost more frustrating that he is so talented and can be so good, but just isn't most of the time, right? Because, like, when I saw Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal at Backlash, I was into that match, and Randy was really good in that match. But we don't get that Randy Orton very often. And
I hope we get my money in the bank.
I hope so too, because otherwise, I mean, matches suffer, feuds suffer when he's not invested. We saw that with Bray Wyatt, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
That was just a nightmare.
We get the New Day versus the Colognes of the Colognes Cologne. And,
the Colognes Cologne.
Yeah, match goes about 6 or 7 minutes. New Day get the win. Very standard fare, but the real story was post-match when the Usos came out and the Usos kind of trash-talked the New Day. So, like, they ripped on Kofi Kingston for having, like, pigtails. They talked about Big E's brass eyes.
He said something about Xavier's shoes, right?
Yeah, they were like, why do you look up, up, and then down, down? What are those? And they said that, you know, you're going to have this, like, feeling that there's something creeping up behind you, and da-da-da, and they're like, it's not paranoia, it's the Usos. I don't know whether it's just me because I was in an inebriated state, but I enjoyed the Usos post-match promo, and it kind of worked for me. I don't think it's a traditional heel promo, but I like that they're actually a team who seem to be trying to get to the New Day. And the New Day seemed to be a little bit... They reacted to the promo, which I liked.
Yeah, because the New Day... I think when the New Day are at their worst is when they're not reacting to things, right? Like, when they're just being comedy and when they're just like, we're untouchable because we're the New Day. And I think that's where their 400 and however many day championship run kind of got stale and went off the rails a little bit, was just because... They were the New Day. You knew they were untouchable. You knew that they were going to break Demolition's record, and they just kind of were. Now they're on the chase for something. And also, like, if the Usos are trying to get in their heads, I mean, they were kind of laughing at some of the lines, like the up, up, down, down thing, like, oh yeah, that's clever. That's clever. But they were reacting to it and saying, okay, well, these guys are trying to call us out. Like, maybe we need to take care of them. And we also want their belts. I like the interplay between the Usos and the New Day a lot. I think that, and I might have said that on the last SmackDown summary, it's been a while, but I think they as teams are going to work really well together. I think the matches are going to be good. And also, I think it helps the Usos' promos to have something to play off as well, which is why I think the Fashion Police stuff worked great for them also, because the Usos haven't really done that much in terms of cutting promos as heels yet. Like, when they were against American Alpha, they kind of tried, but it just didn't seem to hit. So I kind of like that the Usos seem to be hitting more a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm actually really into the New Day Usos match at Money in the Bank, so I'm
looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that a lot, actually.
We had Sami Zayn backstage getting interviewed, and he was asked about, you know, if he's prepping for Money in the Bank, and he talked about watching tape of all the opponents, and the one guy he can't figure out is Nakamura, so that's why he's going to be in commentary for his match tonight with Kevin Owens. And as he was about to go, Baron Corbin walks up, sucker punches him, flings him into some ladders, and then just says, I guess a spot opened up in commentary. I love Baron Corbin.
I was so mad at him. I was like, I was looking forward to Sami Zayn on commentary, man. Like, I love Sami Zayn on commentary. I love Sami Zayn whenever he's on my screen.
Fucking Baron flinging Corbin through on commentary. Some fucking ladders. Yeah.
Oh, what a dick.
Yes.
Dick Baron Corbin. That's the Baron Corbin I want to see, because I'm still at a point with Baron Corbin where I want to like him more than I actually do. But when he's doing stuff like this, I find him the most compelling. So this totally works. And because it's Sami Zayn and he's my favorite, like, of course, I'm going to be extra like, oh, Baron Corbin, damn it.
He's a good bully. Naomi walks up to Shane McMahon and asks for a match with Lana at Money in the Bank. She says, I know I can beat her. I want to see what she's got. And Shane's like, you know, you don't need to do this. Like, you don't need to. And Naomi's like, no, I want it. I want it. I want the match. And Shane's like, okay, you got it. And then Naomi said she was going to snatch her bald again. If I said that, wouldn't work. For some reason, Naomi can get away with
it. I feel like Naomi needs to limit her use of that phrase just because it's an all the time thing. Is that the writers just being like, oh, look, something black women say it every single promo?
I guess so. I mean, I don't mean that. Like, I genuinely don't know any black women in Glasgow, so like, I don't know if that phrase is a phrase that is used a lot.
It is. I mean, it, like, it's a phrase that black women use, but, like...
Still.
I mean, it just seems like it's overused, I feel.
Main event time is Kevin Owens versus Shinsuke Nakamura. Great article on Nakamura in the new edition of Fighting Spirit magazine. I would recommend picking it up. It shares a lot of the views that Sandra and I have talked about on the podcast about Shinsuke and maybe holding back so far in his run. And I guess we'll see if that continues at Money in the Bank, or whether he... of all the people on the roster, one of the people I'm most intrigued about getting into kind of SummerSlam is Nakamura. I have no idea where he's going to go. And I'm quite excited. I'm hoping that that's going to be his big breakout moment on the main roster. We get Kevin Owens versus Nakamura. It goes about just over 10 minutes. And in the end, Nakamura gets to hit the Kinshasa for the victory. Beats Kevin Owens. But before he can really celebrate, Baron Corbin runs in, hits the end of days on Nakamura, gets booed, walks up the ramp. They're kind of leaving Corbin in our minds as the dangerous guy in Money in the Bank. I don't think the match was excellent. I think it was good. And I liked Baron Corbin. I think Baron Corbin needed the ending more than Owens and Nakamura needed it for me.
Yeah, I think so too. I liked the way it ended because I think... Again, like Baron Corbin, he's someone that they're really behind, and he's someone that they really want to be a big star. And sometimes I see it and sometimes I don't. But when he does stuff like this, I can kind of see it. And I think it helps Baron Corbin and it helps him feel like a threat in Money in the Bank, right? And the Kevin Owens Nakamura match itself, I knew it wasn't going to be like the barn burner of a main event of a pay-per-view kind of a situation. I was maybe hoping for a little more, because I would just like to see something a little more from Nakamura. It was good. It was really good. But it wasn't, like, great. I know Kevin Owens had a broken thumb, too, so that probably didn't help anything. But, I mean, it was fine to see. I would love to see a program with Kevin Owens and Nakamura. I would love that. I think they might be headed that way, potentially.
Yeah, that'd be a great match. I love the idea, though, that, like, if I had a broken thumb, I would maybe need a podcast off.
You'd be like, I don't know if I can click call on Skype, you guys. Like, this is just too much.
I don't know if I can do it. I might need a SmackDown summary off. I thought overall, though, the show was an easy watch, so I'm going to give it a thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a thumbs up as well. It introduced some new elements, right? Like, we got Lana, and we have the whole Naomi-Lana situation, which... Again, we'll see how that match goes. I hope that it's better than we think it's going to be.
This is a big test for Naomi as a champion.
You know? Yeah, it is.
I think this is her test. So it'll be interesting.
And I like that Shane is reluctant, though. I mean, the story of Lana as a character is kind of compelling, where no one believes in her and she needs to prove herself. And I mean it.
But also,
I kind of wonder if she's going to win, actually.
But also, Shane's very consistent in that he is all about, you know, you need to earn something. You can't just
show up.
Get to show up.
Charlotte kind of showed up, but she was also, you know, Charlotte. But, I mean, she was a former champion, though. I mean, she was champion on Raw a lot of times. Lana's never been a champion of anything.
So, with that in mind, Sandra, where can people find you on the Twitter machine?
You can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon. Loads of bonus content, Backlash review, other pay-per-view reviews, Extreme Rules review with him and David. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. And Kenny, would you like to know what your punishment is for the month of Maharaja?
Because
I've actually implemented something that you can't get out of now.
You've implemented something?
I have, yes.
Right, okay. Right,
so,
okay.
How for checking messages and uploading stuff to YouTube and being part of Inside the Ropes, you know how I have access to the Inside the Ropes email?
What?
So...
Wait a minute.
I do. Right, okay. So you know this, and
I do right now, but I don't. I'm just trying to think of what you could do. You've not emailed like Heyman or something, have you?
No. Okay. I haven't done that. No, it's nothing that would put you in jeopardy. Okay. I'm not gonna
don't ruin a
ruin
career
your
here.
Reputation or something. I'm not gonna, you know, email Paul Heyman and be like, oh, I think you're a cunt, mate. Like, no, that's not what I'm doing. That would be ridiculous.
Okay.
No, but sometimes I see requests that come through the Inside the Ropes email.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, requests for, you know, interviews or, you know, just opportunities to be on conference calls, shall we say. And I saw that there was a request for a conference call with Jinder Mahal, actually.
No.
And I may have replied in the affirmative. So
you're fucking kidding me.
No, I'm not. I actually did this.
I'm not doing that conference call.
Yes, you are. You are absolutely doing it. You're committed now.
How am I committed? No. They sent the email through. I don't need to do it though. You don't need to do it unless you clicked the RSVP. I didn't.
No, but I did though.
You actually clicked RSVP.
Yeah, I did.
I need to interview Jinder fucking Mahal?
Yeah, exactly. You're going to interview Jinder fucking Mahal, and you're also going to be nice about it.
Oh, what am I going to say to him?
That's up to you.
Oh, I mean, this is so...
That is up to you. You're the interviewer. I am not the one with the skill, right?
Oh, like, fuck you, Sandra. Fuck you. Right up the arse with a dildo, you cunt. Oh... I can't.
You can, and you will. You have to. It's just, it's already done, Kenny. I can't undo this.
Isn't that today?
What? Yeah.
That call's today.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I knew you were around because we were recording this, so.
Oh, you absolute piece of shit scumbag. You fucking piece of shit.
So you should probably, you know, prepare a couple questions for the Maharaja himself.
Oh, no.
I'm so excited to hear this.
This isn't funny.
It's a little funny. It's pretty funny, actually. And besides, it's content. It's content for Inside the Ropes. So I'm helping us out.
Fuck content. They get enough content. They don't need any more.
I mean, we did short them on a SmackDown summary last week, so we owe them an interview with Jinder Mahal.
I am not happy about this, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you all fucking enjoy this, because this is the last fucking thing that I'm gonna do to make it like I like this fucking cunt. Fucking Jinder Mahal.
I was so excited when I saw the email, I just couldn't resist.
I saw it and I was like, because sometimes, you know, they offer you something and it's like, okay. And I was like, I can't do that, obviously, so I'm just not going to get back to them. And then, like, they can, you know, it's fine. But I can't, if you fucking RSVP, I can't back out of it now.
Exactly.
Right, well, I need to go and change a password, folks. So, thanks for listening. if you want to send in your application for SmackDown summary co-host jobs, feel free, because I might not be coming back next week. Thank you for listening, and this is just fucking bullshit. Sandra, go home. Finish the show.
Okay. I mean, I don't really know what more I can say, but, you know, long live the Maharaja.
Dick. ਸਾਨੂੰ ਦੇਖੋ ਮਾਨ ਸਨਮਾਨ ਦੇਖੋ ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਮੁੰਡੇ ਜਿਵੇਂ ਕਰੀਏ ਚੱਕਾਣ ਦੇਖੋ ਸਾਡੀ ਪਛਾਣ ਦੇਖੋ ਚੰਗਾ ਮਦਾਨ ਦੇਖੋ ਕੋਕੇ ਸਮੇਂ ਬੈਰੀ ਕਿੰਨੇ ਨੇ ਹੈਰਾਨ ਦੇਖੋ ਪੀਏ ਮਚਾਰ ਬੈਰੀ ਮੂਹਰੇ ਆਕੇ ਖੰਗੇ ਕਿਹੜਾ ਜਿੱਥੇ ਤੂੰ ਰਹਿਣਾ ਆਪਾਂ ਦੇਸੀ ਆਂਦਾ ਹੈਗਾ ਡੇਰਾ ਦਿਲਾਂ ਚੋਂ ਵਹਿਮ ਕੱਢੋ ਝੂਠੇ ਦਿਲਾਂ ਸੇ ਛੱਡੋ ਸ਼ਾਨੇ ਪੰਜਾਬ ਤੁਹਾਡੀ ਨਗਰੀ ਦਾ ਲਾਂਦਾ ਗੇੜਾ ਮੋਦੀ ਅੱਖਾਂ ਚ ਅੱਖ ਪਾ ਕੇ ਵੇਖਾ ਵੇਖੋ ਮਾਈ ਦਲਾਲ ਕਿਹੜਾ ਜਿਹੜਾ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਪਾਵੇ ਰੋ ਚੱਲ ਤੂੰ ਬਾਹੀ ਜਿੱਤੇ ਬੰਬ ਸੁੱਟੇ ਸਾਡੀ